This is West Southwest on WMUK. I'm Gordon Evans. Every Wednesday, we will feature interviews with newsmakers and discuss issues important to Southwest Michigan. I'm pleased today to be joined by Yvonne Zipp of MLive and the Kalamazoo Gazette and Battle Creek Inquirer reporter Justin Hinckley. Thank you both for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And we look forward to involvement from both MLive and the Inquirer in future editions of West Southwest. Let's welcome in our guest, Western Michigan University President John Dunn. Thank you for being here.
Thank you very much. Nice to be with you and have an opportunity to interact with your many listeners.
Justin, first question for President Dunn.
So last October, I was speaking with Provost Green about Task Force 21 and the work that you guys were doing in the Education Department. And at that time, he told me that sometime by this fall, there could be some changes happening in your guys' teaching college. So I just wanted to see what the status of that was, what you guys are making progress on.
Well, first of all, thank you very much for asking the question. It's always fun to talk about the College of Education and Human Development. The big news there, of course, is that we're in the final stages of a search for a new dean of the college. And that's very important because, as we know, leadership does have an impact. And I am pleased that the faculty, under the interim leadership of Walter Burt, Dean Burt, have been making progress on looking at a variety of programs, moving forward with, I guess, reestablishing what has always been one of the major strengths of the university, and that is its teacher education program. I was particularly pleased, I think, the faculty's response to some of the reviews was not necessarily to argue about the metrics and the metrics used, and, you know, you could spend a lot of time about that because I'm not sure that all the metrics are the right or the most appropriate metrics. But more importantly, I think, was the need to use it as an opportunity to assess, reevaluate programs. And also, I think one of the other strong messages is to make sure that we are in good contact always with our local superintendents, principals, and teachers in our public schools and private schools, and to continue to invite them for counsel, advice, support, and thoughts as appropriate. So all in all, I think things are moving forward. Of course, the new dean will be helpful, but that's never the answer to all of the issues. It's deeper and much more important than that, but that will be a big lift and a big help.
The National Council on Teacher Qualities study finding that a large number of schools are not properly preparing teachers to get into the classroom. Western Michigan is not at the top of that list, and they're not at the bottom in the state of Michigan. Now, a lot of people have questioned methodology on that study. Do you take that to heart? Do you take it with a grain of salt? How do you approach something like that?
Well, I think the National Council on Teacher Quality, there's been an enormous amount of information written about the organization and its analysis. You know, I think a compliment to, again, the college and our faculty and our administrators is that we submitted our information. So many have chosen to not do that. We've always made an effort to be transparent and to hold ourselves up to high expectations and high standards. And we submitted our data, and others did not in the state. And when you do that, you do open yourself up to any kind of criticism as a result of that kind of an analysis. Having said that, many, many were far, far worse than Western Michigan University. And then you have to sort of question, do they have it right, the NCTQ and in the analysis that they're doing? There's been so much dissatisfaction with the process used and what are the indicators that should be important. You know, I've always believed that in teacher education, one of the best models, I think, that we've established over time has been how we go about preparing our teachers that are working in special education environments. You know, one of the secrets there is being able to demonstrate that a student, a prospective teacher, as a student, can demonstrate change, learning outcomes in an individual, one, and then two, and then three, and then four, versus the idea that somehow we should take a very novice teacher and put him or her in a classroom with 20 or 25 students, sometimes 30, and expect desired learning outcomes in that large environment without having demonstrated that in smaller settings. So I think there's some very good work. This goes back to the first question of reassessing how we do that and being helpful. You know, we're also doing a lot of using technology now to allow sort of the virtual classroom And our college is one of the first in the country to have a virtual classroom. So you can actually create settings and situations in students that act out certain things to see what is the response, the performance of the novice teacher, the teacher of the future. And that's very helpful.
Did you have a follow-up, Justin?
Can we expect, Provost Green has said that by this fall that there could be some big announcements made. Do you think that we're still on track to hear some big news by this fall?
I think that the big news we'll hear, of course, will be the appointment of a new dean. I think that with that, it will provide Dr. Green, the provost of the university, an opportunity with the new dean to talk about some desired and affected changes. But I'll leave that for them to make those kinds of determinations and announcements as appropriate.
Yvonne?
Today is obviously a tough day for a lot of students in terms of the federal loan rates doubling to 6.8%. What's this going to mean for families and students at WMU?
Well, there have been a number of analyses that vary in terms of what's the real cost of this over 10 years, you know, and some have said that by doing this that the real cost is an additional $2,600 over 10 years. And then others have argued and debated those values that, you know, maybe that's not quite accurate. But I'm quite optimistic that our at the federal level that the Senate and the House and the President will realize that something must be done. I think the parties do realize that something needs to be done. They just have different ways of wanting to try and address the issue or the problem. You know, it always bothers me, whether it's on our campus or any kind of societal issue where we sort of hold hostage those who are being impacted by change or lack of, while we adults try to get our act together and make sure that we do it right. So the President has made a proposal, the House has a proposal, the Senate has a proposal, and they all just need to roll up their sleeves, get back to work, and remember it's not about them, it's about people who are impacted by these decisions. And they are important decisions, they're very critical decisions, and we need to be thoughtful about that. At the same time, I've been trying to remind the audiences where I've had the opportunity to be with members of the business community that when we talk about educational loans and what is sort of their educational loan debt, that we don't control as a university what you choose to do once you get an educational loan. If you feel that you need to do something else with those dollars other than provide them for one's education, that's your decision, not ours. So I think there's still some misunderstanding about how debt load on education is accumulated and what is that money being used for. I think most people think that when we talk about an educational loan, that it's for tuition and fees, which are legitimate costs. Certainly you need a place to live. You got to buy books, obviously, and maybe even some transportation to get back and forth. But do you need to buy a brand new car? That all goes into and is identified as educational debt or educational loan. And as universities, we don't make those determinations for families and the student that has that loan provision. So, you know, there's a lot of misunderstanding, miscommunication. But to get back to your question, I remain quite optimistic that what we see is the doubling of the interest rate to 6.8 as we speak today, that will be addressed in the coming weeks. I hope soon, not later.
We now know that East Hall on the East Campus will be transformed into an alumni center by mid-2015. You've got an architect picked for the project, but there are still some people hoping that somehow between now and then, or at least between now and when demolition would start on the other buildings, that there will be a change of thought in the administration building. Is there any reason between now and then that you would reconsider what you have decided about East Campus?
A lot of money. You know, we've been very open, very transparent. We have made it known starting way, way back several months ago what our plans were. There's nothing that's hidden. There's no secrets. This really is truly about trying to preserve what I think is the jewel in the crown, and that's East Hall, and as much of East Hall as possible. We have had some conversations that there are others who are interested in trying to assist with East Hall. Nothing's come to fruition yet in terms of donors or dollars and that kind of thing.
For the wings of East Hall, in other words?
Yeah, we are committed to clearly the one of the wings. It's the other wing that's sort of in question, but wouldn't it be nice? And so I maintain some sense of hope and optimism that we might be able to do more than we indicated initially or what has been shown in diagram thus far. When we talk about the speech and language building and also West Hall, those buildings are not in good shape. The idea that somehow that those are currently at a standard where they could be occupied and used for classrooms and other purposes, that's just not accurate.
But is it accurate to say, as the group Friends of Historic East Campus will, that they're structurally sound?
We've had an architect that did indicate that at an earlier time, although the speech and language building was always the shaky one there because, as some have reminded us, it was never a building that was put together in the right manner to begin with. But, you know, whether one wants to argue about being structurally sound or not, they clearly are not at a state that you would want to or I would want to sit there and take classes without a huge amount of money going into both for fire, safety, also accessibility with respect to people with disabilities. All of those federal codes and state standards would have to be achieved and met. And then the question becomes, for what purpose? That becomes a second question. So I don't think there's anything at all that changes the perspective on West Hall and the speech and language building. North Hall is a building that still, as I look at it, there's some very nice features in North Hall. We hope to be able to preserve aspects of that and bring it into East Hall, into the Alumni Center. The Alumni Association has endorsed, the Executive Board has endorsed our plans. They're unanimously, they're enthusiastic about it. And I know that we'll never probably satisfy everyone, but again, time is now for action. Wouldn't it be nice if we waited another 5 years and hoped that something new would materialize? But we've been waiting for 20 years. And there's a point at which putting, again, $250,000 to $300,000 in preserving minimal kinds of heat and access to the buildings, when you add that over 10 years or the last 20 years, now you're talking $3 million, $4 million, $5 million. There's got to be an end to that. I may not be the most popular person on that point, but this is not about popularity contest. It's about trying to do, as President Waldo's granddaughter reminded us, and that is to make sure that we really preserve the building that was the first and the beginning of this great university, and that's East Hall. And we're unwavering in that commitment. We've made that statement. We're going to do it. We'll make it happen.
You're listening to West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Our guest is Western Michigan University President John Dunn. We're joined today by Yvonne Zipp of MLive and the Kalamazoo Gazette and Battle Creek Inquirer reporter Justin Hinckley. Justin, next question for President Dunn.
I wondered if you could talk a little bit about, you know, sort of with the loan debt issue, there's a lot of conversation about the value of education and how well universities and colleges prepare kids for careers that are actually out there today. So I wonder if you could just talk a little bit about when you look at Western's course loads and the kind of degrees that you guys offer students, how do you guys make sure that it's the right kind of degree for the right kind of economy?
First of all, again, it's a very good question, and we do spend a lot of time meeting with corporate industrial leaders, presidents of major firms to do a couple things. One is to continue to assess what their needs are, and then also to invite their input as to whether we are getting it right with respect to the product that's being produced. Now, of course, the premise of your question is that the whole basis of higher education is for a career. You know, I'll only add that that is very, very important. But it's also very important that we acknowledge that there are many individuals who are interested in university and a university education for the intellectual richness that it provides, how they choose to exploit the academic courses and experiences they have in a way that best serves them well in terms of finding employment, job, opportunity, and future is vastly different than how I might look at that. And so we want to be always very respectful of what individuals choose in terms of the area of study. I think we do that well at the university. We do monitor what is the placement, the extent that we can. We're doing quite well with that. We're very pleased about that. But we also acknowledge that there are students who, unlike the world as we might see it, still after that degree, desire to take a year off or to do something that gives back to the community in some way that does not necessarily lead to a direct employment. If they have the resources to do that or some help to do that, of course, that makes a difference. Our successes, though, in engineering, business, aviation program, clearly the sciences, science education, math, economics, our graduates are doing very, very well. We cannot produce enough folks, for instance, in supply chain management. People are demanding and need that kind of assistance and support. Last week, we had an entity here that's looking at relocating. They went to our College of Engineering. They looked at our ability there to do work with plastics, injections and molds, very sophisticated work. You know, and one of the principals of that firm and that corporation said, you know, I'm a graduate of USC, and I've been to the University of Southern California, and they can't do what you can offer and do here right now. And the reason is that your students are not only understanding about plastics and what is required from an engineering perspective, they're doing it. And so, you know, we've always been a university that provides good practical hands-on experiences in addition to a great education. And I think that's one of our strengths and will continue to be for many years.
Yvonne?
I wanted to ask, some information came out over the weekend regarding the unemployment rates for recent Cooley Law School graduates, or building on that. I don't know if you've had a chance to see them.
I have not. Thank you.
About 9 months after graduation, 24.4% of Cooley grads were still unemployed, compared with about 12.8% nationally and about 17% in the state of Michigan. Is that, as you all are moving toward a partnership, is that a concern?
Well, it's a concern only in the sense that we're always talking about human beings. Anytime we're talking about individuals, assuming that one chooses to be employed at a particular point in his or her life, and I haven't seen the data, so I don't know what the data set looks like. But I think one of the things that is important to the Thomas Cooley Law School and is important to Western Michigan University is through affiliations that you bring strengths to one another that could be very, very helpful. And perhaps we can be very helpful as we move forward in those conversations as well in assisting Cooley and its graduates and its products. I know that the earlier data sets have been very encouraging, and I am familiar with those. Now, that's assuming that, as some people make the assumption, that one goes to a law school to become a practicing attorney. Many people access law education for the benefit and the value and the application of that, whatever the field of work may be. It could be in human resources, an example. It could be in business. There's a very interesting thing that occurs in law education, and it may be the student they attract, or it may be how a student goes through the law curriculum. But most are very good at being able to analyze and have good analytical skills, and they tend not to see things in black and white. That when we're dealing with issues, there's a range of options. There's a yes and a no, but then there's a multitude of possibilities between a yes or a no. And people who go through legal education, at least in my experience, seem to be pretty darn good at trying to keep pressing the issue, what are other options that we have yet to consider that might work to satisfy the particular need that's here. The other thing that I would add is that I think in some ways what we're doing in the affiliation with Cooley is not trying to suggest that we need another law school. We're trying to be very thoughtful about that by saying, look, let's look for partnerships and relationships. Isn't that what the public at large and the governor, for instance, is asking us to do? And that's exactly what we're doing as we explore the affiliation with the Thomas Cooley Law School.
As contrast, for instance, to the medical school, where you are creating a new medical school to address a shortage of doctors.
Because, again, the number of slots available, seats available for students who are highly qualified to access medical education, we need to ramp that up substantively and significantly. So we've got to get more seats. We've got to have greater opportunity. And that's what we're doing there. In law, I think right now, at least at this time in the country, it's more a question of the quality of the curriculum, the richness, and also making sure that we are being thoughtful about opportunities for students. I don't think anyone is forcing young people or more senior people to access law. It's still a choice that individuals are making, and they should do that eyes wide open and understand. Of course, what Cooley does extremely well is that you don't have to stop your current job to be a student at Cooley. You don't have to stop the world to go to law school. You can continue to pursue that on a part-time basis through some very innovative curricular offerings and how they do that and time available for the working individual.
Tuition here at Western Michigan University is going to go up 3.57% in the fall. That was approved by the Board of Trustees last month. Wayne State University last week raised tuition almost 9%. There's an op-ed written for the Detroit News by former state superintendent Tom Watkins where he warns that Wayne State is the, as he puts it, canary in the coal mine. And he questions how financially stable Michigan's universities are and says that there may be more universities who have to go down this path. Just for Western Michigan University, is there reason to be concerned about a potential big tuition increase like that down the road to meet financial obligations?
Well, I think what Western Michigan University is worried about, and I think perhaps what I haven't read the editorial, but I think what the message is that the state of Michigan, its elected leaders, its legislators and governor need to really get serious about providing funding and support for higher education. Remember, we were at $125 million at one time for Western Michigan University, and we're now at $95 million. So we've seen a decrement of over $30 million. That's on an annual basis. Those dollars are not coming to the university. So when people look at tuition, there has to be a way to continue to provide for the demand that's there and also the expectations and the rigor of the curriculum. And yet again, the public at large and all of us expect more and more of universities. Last week, we received a note, that one that I would support, that we all need to be very cognizant and supportive of students who are pregnant during their education, and also that we need to think thoughtfully and carefully also about making sure that we have opportunities for their offsprings in terms of a mother who has young children, the parenting support. What do I do with this young child while I'm attending the university, et cetera, et cetera? So, you know, the expectations continue to go up, and yet funding, and particularly in the state of Michigan, and it's not a point that anybody should feel good about or proud of. And this is true whether it's the University of Michigan Ann Arbor or Michigan State University or Western Michigan University. We've all seen substantive disinvestment by the state of Michigan. And if there's a canary in a coal mine, that's the canary in the coal mine, is that we have to do what other states are beginning to do and to recognize we've pushed this as far as we're going to be able to push it. On our campus, we have the lowest administrative cost of any of the 15 public universities. Of the research universities in the United States, we're the fifth in terms of the fewest dollars expended for administration. So there's a point at which we are looking, we need assistance and support. And I think Wayne came to that conclusion and said, look, we can't sustain where we are now, and therefore we're going to go to an 8.9 or 9% increase. Will that happen here at some point? You know, I think those are very good questions. Each year is a new year. I have 8 great trustees that are very thoughtful. 4 of those individuals have been appointed by the previous governor, Jennifer Granholm, and 4 have been appointed by Governor Snyder. I don't think this is about politics. I think this is about the reality of looking at how do you sustain a great university and continue to provide in the way that we should for our future.
Justin Hinckley, Battle Creek Inquirer, another question.
The legislature right now and the State Board of Education are sort of at odds about whether or not the state should move forward with Common Core, which of course is a K-12 issue, but that, you know, as it affects the students who feed into your university, what are your thoughts about whether or not Michigan should adopt Common Core?
Well, let me try to duck that a little bit, and I'm going to say that right from the beginning and say I think what Michiganders are looking for, and I think educators as well, is to make sure that we are providing for our young people beginning at kindergarten in those critical K to third grade years through the middle school and high school, a really great education, a great curriculum. and one that has imprint and mark of people who are most knowledgeable and have great experience in having done that over an extended period of time. And how that fits and works in every school district may have some variability about it in terms of the nature of the particular school district. Remember, it was not too long ago that Governor Granholm was advocating that we should have, you know, at least 100 new smaller schools, high schools. Remember that? And on that point, I was always befuddled by that because the more you do that to provide the kind of science curriculum you need with the laboratories that are necessary, the kind of richness of the educational environment, the answer is not necessarily smaller. It's in trying to bring those resources together and in units within larger complexes that provide for the what students need, whether it's in language instruction and access to language instruction or science, math, certainly continued emphasis on good writing skills and helping to encourage young people at early ages to read and to read often, to read a lot. My own experience is I never thought that I was a particularly good writer, but I finally figured out with the help of some others, you only get better writing by writing. You need to maybe at times lift some of the stricture, pardon me, Yvonne, the stricture of the comma and the semicolon and to let people express themselves and then come back and begin to look at how you're trying to express yourself so that you don't get so frozen that you're stifled in your ability to express yourself in written language and communication. I'm famous for using dashes more than I ought to and things like that. But, you know, I enjoy writing, and I've had the opportunity to do some text and some papers, and I really enjoy having the opportunity to try to put something on paper. So the Common Core discussion is going to continue. There's a huge national ongoing conversation discussion. I would hope that our superintendents might have a little more voice in consultation with their principals and their and those really great, experienced, talented teachers who, when asked, really do know best, and they can help us get this right.
Von Zipp, Evan Live, Kalamazoo. One last question for President Dunn.
I know that the faculty were being surveyed earlier in May regarding the possibility of WMU becoming a smoke-free campus. Mm. Are the results of that in, and do you have a sense of what may the next step be?
We're continuing that study. Dr. Diane Anderson had taken the leadership in that. But the inquiry and the desire is very, very real, and that is that we're not trying to suggest that necessarily that people cannot smoke. What we're trying to get across is the idea that not smoking within the university community. And we were trying to assess with that what exceptions might there be. For instance, on certain celebratory moments on the university campus, do we sort of lift that because we have many guests on campus? We don't necessarily want all of our guests to feel that we're surprising them with an expectation without prior warning. But I think for our faculty and our staff and our students and many of our employees, the idea is not all that distasteful to them. That, as a matter of fact, even those who do smoke, I think, see a couple things. One is, I guess I'll have to figure out how to navigate through that, or maybe I'll stop smoking. Well, again, we're not asking people to stop smoking, but to have smoking cessation clinics, other tools or aids that might help someone who chooses to do that. For an individual that, I don't know what the current price is for a pack of cigarettes, but it's not inexpensive. And so, you know, you might give yourself a pay raise, or for a student, it might help you with your educational debt or loan, right? I won't go much further with that because I'll get myself in deep, deep doo-doo. But we are exploring it seriously. Michigan Ann Arbor has done this, and successfully. There are at least 900 institutions in the United States that have already gone down this path. So our goal is to be thoughtful about it and provide ample warning. I am not interested in creating a smoking police force, however. I think this is to be governed by all of us reminding one another how we abide by expectations on the university campus, and that we're kind and gentle with one another, and certainly always civil, courteous, respectful. But I think we can get there.
Western Michigan University President John Dunn, thank you very much for your time. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
I want to thank Yvonne Zipp of MLive and the Kalamazoo Gazette.
Thank you for having me.
Justin Hinckley of the Battle Creek Inquirer. Thank you both.
Thank you very much.
This is West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.